reasons that hospitality is hard. Why would you not practice it? Why would you not have people into your home? What would stop a person? I'm going to turn this down just a little, I think. Here we go. You have to vacuum. Poor, poor person, yeah. Can we turn it down just a little? Yeah. At your table, why don't you write five excuses? You got five excuses that you can give me. And I'm going to tear them all apart here in a second. Let me just add for a second, if you don't mind, let me just add a little food for thought to your conversation. I'm inviting you to be very honest. So I want you to share, what is it that would stop you from having someone in your own home? So if you were to run across somebody in the street, maybe there's something in that person's personality, whatever. I want you to be really honest with each other here. What would stop you from having somebody in your home? That's what I'm asking for.
Thank you.
All right. We could give more time to this. Now, let's hear a few of your excuses. You get your chance to whine and grumble, and let's hear them. What's that?
Social anxiety.
Social anxiety? Okay. That's getting more and more a problem in our society. Why do you think?
Because we're not doing it as much.
Bingo. We're not used to it. We're not used to interacting with people anymore. We do a lot more virtually and so on. And so it's getting harder and harder to actually be able to do this. Okay? Yeah, it's getting tougher and tougher to pull over and pick up a hitchhiker because you never know what's going to go on. Yeah, of course. Of course, there's fears like that. Okay? I'm not telling you to go out on the highway and pick up a hitchhiker and bring them home, okay? So don't mishear me. That's not necessarily, unless the Spirit would lead you to do that, then do it. But
we need rides.
What's that?
We need rides.
We need rides?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, okay. And that's going to show up in a lot of other excuses. How many people have, I don't have time?
Yeah,
okay. Our culture has changed, it's shifted a lot, and so generationally this might be really hard to understand. Well, why don't we do this? Well, primarily, young families don't have time. If you want to play hockey, you're gone 5 days a week. And you're going to be gone either at 6 in the morning or from 6 to 10 at night, and every single weekend. And so it's actually become difficult, and we look at it, oh, man, you're missing church, you're a bad Christian, they've just made sacrifices, and it's true. They're going to have to make decisions for this to happen. It's going to be difficult, and time is going to be a big thing. However, at the core, our time is one way that we have hoarded treasure for ourselves. We all have equal amounts of this thing, correct? And so when Jesus tells a parable like the parable of the 10 minas, for instance, every single one of his servants, he says, a king's going to go away to a foreign place, so he gives each one of his servants the same amount. That might be something like time. Not necessarily ability or giftings, but it's time. Gives them all the same amount. What are you going to do with it? And some people use 10, you know, I invested and got 10 times the return, some people 5 times, and one guy's just like, I just buried it in the sand. And the core of that is this understanding that we can actually all be selfish with our time. It doesn't matter if it's a young generation, doesn't matter if it's an old generation, but we can all be selfish with our time, whether we have little of it or we have much of it. And if we had a little bit of spare time, I'm gonna venture to say one of the ways that we can begin practicing hospitality, even when we have a small amount of time, if we're faithful with that small amount of time, it can be just as effective. And so we can use little bits, and if you have much, much is required. So think about what Jesus says, to whom much is given, much will be required. Now in your retirement, has it been that most of our seniors today disappear to Arizona for 6 months, but look down on the young people for being busy with their families?
Yeah.
Right? So which one's more selfish? Ooh, you can stone me in the parking lot later, but you've earned your retirement. I've served my time. I've done my portion. And yet we hoard time in a way that we don't often think of it as a gift from God. And so you use our gifts and our freedoms, and to whom much has been given, also remember much will be required. Now that doesn't mean you can't use your time in Arizona to do the same thing. Don't use it selfishly though. Be careful with that. Young people, according to Scripture, 1 Corinthians 7, for instance. 1 Corinthians 7 talks about the married person and the unmarried person. Paul says this, I wish that all men would be like me, unmarried. Like, very high view of marriage, Paul. Well, why? Because what Paul's getting at is he's saying, when you're married, you have different priorities. Those are God-built-in priorities. Your priority is with your home, with your family, to invest in them, to build into them. So to require them to do the same kind of ministry that a single person would do would be foolish. Because God's actually asked them to use that time and invest that time with their families in a unique way. And yet he tells them to also to practice hospitality. So it's built into the difference in time, whether you have a lot of time with your family or a lot of free time or whatever, each of us has different amounts of time, but all of us have 24 hours in a day. And so we need to use that time wisely. So we have a lot of different excuses. The sad part is all of us are selfish, correct? Seems I don't need a Bible passage probably to point that out. Okay, what other excuses you got? Let's keep tearing each other down.
Mixed marriage.
Oh, it gets weird. Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
Some people who like to entertain or who want to at others.
Yeah.
So you might have the idea, but we'll have to be on board.
Okay. So we're going to talk about what do we do with that. Like, my husband's an introvert. He would much rather stay at home, be in the quiet. And I'm an extrovert. I want to be out, and I want people over all the time. What do we do with that? And I think there's, we're going to touch on that. So, well, thank you. It's going to require sacrifice from both, correct? Probably, yeah.
And just poor planning. Sometimes it's just not in the forefront of your mind, and a week goes by, and you don't practice any of it.
Okay.
You might think you want to, but if you don't plan, and be intentional.
Okay, so no intentionally, no plan. We'll just figure it out as we go. Sometimes I think, actually, I'm going to push this a little further. Sometimes we don't practice hospitality because of best intentions. I've got really good intentions. Once I get past this season, then I'll do it. Or when I get a better house, or when we get this thing in life figured out, or when we're done haying, or when we're done this, then we'll do it. And does it usually happen? Not always. Sometimes. But best intentions are often a way of putting something off from something that you know you're supposed to do now. Even in our inconvenience. Remember, hospitality is not convenient. And so the best intentions can often get in the way of us doing something like hospitality. Good. Anyone else?
Feeling inadequate.
Bingo. In what way? Not a good cook. Don't have a nice enough house. What else?
Maybe not a conversationalist, or maybe not common.
I don't have anything in common. What are we going to talk about? Lorna prayed that we would be able to have conversations.
I did. I hoped that our conversation would go easy.
Yeah. What a strange thing to pray.
Thank you.
Yeah. we have a couple in our church, and she talks like crazy. And so she invited... I was just reminded of her. Thank you. I'll pull my foot out later. She was so nervous to have her associate pastor over. She invited other couples over and told them, like, I'm just not sure if we're going to be able to have a conversation. And just like, okay, like, you've never had a problem having a conversation. But she was so nervous. And so it's interesting that I'll shut up now. Any other excuses? Anyone else? Insecurities are very real. Again, insecurities often sometimes reveal our idols and sometimes reveal our pride. There are areas that our pride might be hurt. My house doesn't sort of measure up. Your house is nicer than mine. Those types of things can really play out. I'm not as good a cook as so-and-so, or I don't know if I'm good at conversation. A lot of those things at the core are pride or fear. Yeah. Good point. Good point.
Find something you're comfortable with and that you'd like to do.
Good. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. What are we going to do?
Moving that a little further, perhaps going into a different generation. Because we tend to gravitate towards those who are interested in the same things, maybe same age.
Yep.
But what about moving to older or younger people?
Okay.
So
do you think there's a bit of an insecurity? Like, why would they ever want to hang out with us? Like,
exactly.
This? Okay, that's what you're saying?
Well, and that leads into the other thing that I wrote down, was afraid of getting turned down.
Hmm.
You make an invite, and then what?
Okay.
Is it real, or is it the excuse real, or is it just they don't want to come over?
Okay.
You can feel inadequate or hypocritical if you're not in a good place spiritually.
Oh, interesting. Good. That's very interesting.
My favorite one, laziness.
Just laziness? Just sheer laziness. Don't want to. Okay.
Yeah.
Singleness. Interesting. Good. I like that. I like that idea. Nothing wrong with that. Singleness. She likes to invite somebody else into the process with her. And I've actually heard other stories about that too. Like we read a story of a guy that they had run into this other couple, and he knew that he was, I think he was a hunter, big hunter or something like that, but he was not. And so he invited this couple over, but he invited another hunter from the church over for a meal at the same time. And those two hit it off. It was great. And they had a great time, but it was just a way of collecting and connecting other people together too. And I think that's a hospitable type of an attitude. But at the core of what you're saying, sometimes our like circumstances make it difficult. What if I live in a senior's home? Can I still be hospitable? How do I do that? What if I don't have a car and go visit somebody? Or there are legitimate things that make it difficult. But what we're going to talk about in a little bit here is it just constrained to, I need to have someone into my house for a meal, and this is what hospitality is. So we want to think really big picture about hospitality first. So that's a legitimate one. So your singleness, your marital status, you're going through a divorce, you're in a messy home situation. Maybe you're a student, you live in somebody's basement. Should I invite other people into this person's basement? I don't know. So, yeah. Anyone else?
Mm-hmm. It might not just be about physical safety, but that could be fear of conflict because that's a totally different place, maybe totally different personalities.
Okay.
That could mean feeling very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think of young couples that, with the cost of girl shoes and stuff, they can't afford to have anybody in.
Interesting. Okay.
Physical health.
Yep. Other big concerns for sure.
Make yourself vulnerable.
You sure do. Okay. That's a strange question. How many of these are good excuses? Not very many of them. Some of them certainly have more legitimate hurdles that you need to overcome. Some fears are legitimate, and some need to be met with some wisdom. Okay, so let's be clear on that. I can't go about hospitality in the way that somebody else might do it, or in a way that I might have in my mind that it should look, but maybe I can be hospitable in a way that in the way that God has made me, in the circumstances that I have, with the energy that I have, with the resources that I have. God is asking me to be faithful with what I have. Not with what somebody else has and what opportunities other people have, or with the home that somebody else has, or with the time, or all of those things. It's you. You're an individual. So let's be really clear when we're talking about hospitality that God has created you unique, placed you in a difficult circumstance maybe, on purpose. God is sovereign over all of these things. And maybe in that unique and difficult circumstance, He is going to bring you into contact with a stranger that you will have an opportunity to minister to that no one else would. So start to think of these things. We often look at them as excuses, but maybe they're actually part of God's design to place you in the place that He wants you. And if that's in your singleness, if that's in your aloneness, or if that's in even your difficulty or health concerns or different things, I don't know. We don't always understand the plans of God to do that. However, I will acknowledge that there are legitimate difficulties. So how do we overcome some of these? Now, we're going to try to get really practical, and so I hope you bear with me. We've talked a lot about the home, right, in hospitality. I want to just start by saying that hospitality begins with a posture. It's the posture of your life. So when we think of a person that's just slouched over, sort of walking around like this, what do you think of them? Just slumped over, just shuffling around.
Having a bad day.
Eeyore. Nobody loves me. Defeated. Good.
Low self-esteem.
Okay. If I sit here with my head down, looking at my shoes, your posture, your physical posture actually has, it tells a story about who you are, what you're going through, but it also sets your stance in life. It either shows that I'm so focused on the ground, I'm not going to see something come in front of me, even if it was there. On the other hand, if I'm standing here like this, what am I ready for? The posture of my life, I'm ready for a fight. So let's just think, just very physical sense, regarding hospitality, it has to do with your outlook on life. So when we stand up straight, when we have our eyes up and out, our head, our shoulders are ready, there's a spirit of readiness. There's awareness as to what's going on around me. But if I got my feet down here and my eyes looking at my feet, all I'm going to see is my own difficulties, my own circumstances, one step in front of the other. But if I have my eyes up and out, that's a complete different perspective on the same room, isn't it? It's the same situation, the same life, the same place that you are existing right now. I'm not asking you to leave where you are and who you are. I'm actually asking you to just get up and look out from where you are and then to stand there and be ready. And that's, I think, what the Lord has done for Marcia and myself. As we began to write on hospitality, what it started to do is just stood us up, start thinking about this. Has God placed this person in my life for me to play a role in? It might be a simple word. It might be something that maybe it is an invitation in. And it can be something just as simple as don't let people stand in your doorway. So just think about that. You got an office. This happened to me. I wrote this in my paper. That very day, I'm having a conversation with somebody. Guy comes and stands in my doorway and starts to talk. And I start to think, okay, I could keep him at distance. But I'm just like, I just wrote this. Why don't you come in? Come in and sit down. And he sat there for an hour and a half. But he needed to talk. And so it was a posture and just readiness, willingness to be interrupted, and then an awareness to say, okay, this is an opportunity that God has placed. Come in. And it's an invitation into your life for a period of time. Might be half an hour, might be, maybe this is a legitimate fear. What if they come and stay for 6 hours? Anyone have someone like that? Don't say that. You might be that person. What if this person comes over? I know when they come over, they never leave. Oh, right? And we have all these different things, but again, it comes back to our selfishness for sure. So begin with a posture. Begin just with an attitude of being willing to be interrupted and to be aware in the same realm that you're already living. Who are the people that God has placed? Remember, hospitality is love for who? Strangers. Who is the person in my life that I don't know well and that has been sort of on the out? I've kept them at arm's length. Another legitimate fear is, how am I going to be viewed if I associate with that person? Who did Jesus go and hang out with? Tax collectors, prostitutes, sinners. And yet, most of the time, it was everyone looked at him and just like, what are you doing? And who looked down on him?
Pharisees.
The religious leaders. So don't think for a second that hospitality may not pit you against your own church and against other people, that people of faith, for instance. It may not be understood always, even within in the realm of our churches, even. Why are you associating with that person? Why have you had that person over? And people are watching. I mean, gossip exists in the church. Maybe I'm touching on something that doesn't happen here. Maybe. Likely not. People are going to talk, and you need to be okay with that. What if you associate with this? And I think hospitality, if we are willing to be inconvenienced, willing to suffer the shame, willing, like social shame or cultural shame, which was the Pharisees. There was cultural shame. And in the book of John, over and over, it says, if you associate with these people, you'll be kicked out of the synagogue. Well, that's huge. And that holds huge social constraints. And yet God, Jesus demonstrated that for us really well. And when we're willing to do that, I think this is one of the only ways that we're going to reach an increasingly immigrant population and an increasingly different population in regards to things like homosexuality and so on. So some of the books that we read had to do with that. How are we going to reach the gay community? It's not going to be through programs. They're not going to come to your church, correct? You plan a program. Do they feel comfortable coming to church? Not likely. But they still need Christian people to interact with them and to love them and not to walk away and disassociate with them. So then the next question becomes, how do we do that without giving license to their lifestyle? And your pastor's job to tell you about that. So we begin with, we're going to come back to it. We're going to begin with a posture a little bit. Be ready, be willing, and be wise. Okay? Be ready, be willing, and be wise. And so we address something like fear. We address something like the reality that hospitality could be dangerous. I would say don't put yourself in a vulnerable, dangerous situation. Single girl, don't invite some single guy that you find in the subway over. That's stupid. That's foolish. And so there needs to be wisdom that's wrapped up in it. And associate wisely with people and in a discerning way. And yet, there's a portion of hospitality that is risky, correct? You could get burned. You could invite a family with a bunch of little kids over, and your white couch is not going to look white when they leave. That was one of our first interactions in Humboldt. We went over to this house and spilled some stuff all over the carpet. And brand new house and brand new carpet, and Marsha stain remover worked really good, thankfully. So, but this is a fear that we have. There's legitimate fears for safety. Maybe it's wise to practice hospitality for a time in public settings. Go somewhere, meet them where they are at. And it's not always bad either. So posture. What else can we do to make hospitality possible? I want you to brainstorm for a little bit. Here's your chance.
It might be the opposite of, willing to use these spontaneous opportunities that arise, and that is to actually plan.
Yep.
And it may make it easier with some of the concerns that were mentioned, with the cleaning and the cooking and all that, Or if you're not able to afford it, plan on having a number of people and call it a potluck.
Yep.
Person brings a salad, another one brings the meat, and then you may provide the drinks.
But that goes against all what I know of hospitality. Because my mom used to have 15 types of baked bread and 25 types of cookies in the freezer. But if I don't do that, that's not really hospitality, isn't it?
Well, she's a cook.
Still opening your hole.
Okay. Can you be hospitable in someone else's home? Interesting. I think so. I think when you go, you can actually be a caveat to build relationships, to make new people feel welcome and to feel loved and so on. That's good. I like the potluck idea. That's a great idea. So let me add another dimension to planning, because I think this is a big part of making hospitality possible. Planning isn't necessarily, we need to schedule on my calendar 2 weeks down the road. We have 2 hours slotted out for you to come over. How does that make a person feel? But after 2 hours, out of here. How does that automatically, what would a person think? Like, I can probably fit you in on Wednesday evening. It probably will, actually. You're an inconvenience to me. And so I'm going to try to fit you into our craziness of life. So be careful, actually, how you present that. Keep your plans private. but at the same time, what if we planned a little bit differently, a little bit smaller? What if you kept a bunch of $5 Tim's cards in your pocket. And when somebody, you're talking to somebody, and you just, this person is sharing something, hey, it's my birthday today, and it's the person at the store. It's like, oh, really? That's pretty cool. And so hand them a little Tim's card. But you've planned, you're ready to extend love to somebody that you don't know. Does that make sense? Your planning can be more than just, when can I have someone into my home? You can also plan to interact with a new person. You can interact with a stranger in a unique way. And one of the ways we watch for this is something that in reading, it was someone labeled it as a heart drop. So someone will share something. It's just a little snippet, a little one-off comment that is actually revealing a portion of that person's heart that is significant. So we had a gentleman over for a meal the one time. And he just said, oh, I thought you had me over for my birthday. And I'm like, no, we didn't even know it was your birthday. Oh, my birthday's in 5 days. But my parents never made a big deal about birthdays. So what was that? What was the heart drop?
Birthdays were a big deal to him.
Birthdays are a huge deal to him. But no one ever makes a big deal about birthdays. And so there was a heart drop immediately there, but we needed to be watching for it. And I think a lot of people do that. They'll share loneliness. They'll share hurt. They'll share excitement. They'll share things that are going on. And it's when we watch for those, when we have a posture of hospitality, we're watching in the conversation with strangers and listening well, you're going to hear those and be able to respond to them. And then sometimes it is to draw them into more conversation. Sometimes it's a word of encouragement. Sometimes it's a tangible way to serve that person, or so on. Sometimes it's just to listen. And that's a hard thing to do, I think, a lot of times. So heart drops are a key one, I think, just to be watching for those. So I would encourage you, that can be practiced within the church, I think. Most of us aren't prone to just spill out our guts. But we generally do that. We probe a person to see whether or not they're listening and whether or not they actually care enough to ask a follow-up question. And so ask those follow-up questions and then see where the Lord would take it from there. But a big part of hospitality is a posture of your life, not just the practice. It's something that you are, not something that you do. Can we agree to that, or do you disagree? Can you be hospitable without doing hospitality in a certain way?
Yes.
Okay.
That kind of reminds me of the notion of acting your way into feeling. If you're not feeling your way into acting, so you may not feel hospitable. But if you can practice hospitality, you will learn. Does that make sense?
Yeah. To me, it does. To everyone else who hasn't thought about hospitality for a long time, why don't you explain yourself? Could you give us an example of how that might play out? Or?
Well, I might not feel like asking someone over for all of the above reasons. And if I never do justice to someone, then they might not feel like they're asking.
You won't. Yeah. Okay.
Just wait until I feel like doing it, I might never feel like doing it.
Okay. So it's something that we do. Maybe we need to start through just obligation, in a sense. I know this is something I need to do, and so we do it. Okay.
That's the way a lot of stuff works.
True.
It's not being or doing. You do something, and then you become better at it. And you force yourself to do the next step, and then you become better. And if you don't intentionally walk that direction, well, you'll never get moving.
Mm-hmm. So, at your tables, I want you to discuss, you probably all have a picture of someone who's been hospitable in your life, correct? I'd like to know, but do most of you have an example of someone who is hospitable, that you would consider hospitable? Who would say they do? I need to see a show of hands because I can't hear your brains rattling. And like Lorna, she's fallen asleep, so it really doesn't matter.
I'm thinking.
Yeah, okay. The two look eerily similar for some reason, Lorna. Yeah. Yeah, I've used that one too. Oh, I'm just praying. Yeah. So most people have that picture. So I'd like to know what it is about that person that seems hospitable. What is it that they do that seems hospitable to you? Brainstorm that at your table just for a little bit. I'm curious to hear what you have to say. It's going to be similar to the definition, just so you know. But I want your practical insights as to what it was that they did. What it was that they did that seemed hospitable.
They're anxious.
is, well, I didn't want to say that. It's 2 hours. I didn't want to get better at it.
All right, let me ask you a question. This person that you have in your mind of a person who is hospitable, have you ever had? Have you ever gone somewhere with them and it was almost ridiculous how many people that they knew?
Yes.
Was it that way? That they're all like, hey, and they always are interacting with every single person around them. Was there the trait sort of that way? So what? Or what else? What else was it? What else was it that about that person that, like, man, that's a person that gets this hospitality thing?
They're your husband and Anne's husband. The other Anne's husband. They have. I'm talking to you, John. John and my husband have different great personalities, and Anne and I are just quiet because they just know everybody.
Oh, right!
Oh, boy. I don't know you, but I'm thinking there's some baloney going on here. Just reading the room. Just reading the room.
Usually friendly, kind, and outgoing personality.
Friendly, kind, outgoing. Okay, the last one. Let's make a little conversation here. Do you have to be outgoing to be hospitable?
No. You can be genuinely interested in the person and welcoming and everything. You don't necessarily have to be outgoing. You look at them when they talk to you. You ask questions about them rather than focusing on yourself.
An introverted person can actually be far more hospitable than an extroverted person. For that very reason. An extroverted person often is fueled by being with people. So it's actually not that they're selfish in it, but their personality is fueled by an interaction with another. So they tend to talk more than listen. Some of you are laughing because you are that. Some of you are laughing because you are married to that. But generally, an extroverted person doesn't listen well. And an introverted person, in their quietness, plays a unique role within the church. And when people are around them, they generally listen and people share with them. And so you don't have to be an extrovert to practice hospitality at all. So very good. What else?
The anxiety hurdle is greater with the introvert.
Okay, the anxiety hurdle. Why though? Why though? Where does the anxiety come from?
That's just in the introvert personality. You have certain fears about what you feel safe sharing with others, or even be afraid of what normally happens in that kind of interaction. Introverts don't like small talk.
Yeah.
We like to go deep.
Yeah.
And the natural process in a developing friendship is you start on the superficial level and you slowly go deeper, while the introvert likes to go down deep right away.
How many people are married? I want to see a show of hands here on this one too. How many people are married to a different personality? Oh man, God's good, isn't he? Yeah, man, is God good. I think that's very important. Not that it has to be that way. But that's a gift from the Lord, I think. Sometimes the... What's that? Oh, yeah, okay. Anyway. So I just want to... I want to probe it just a little bit more. What are some other things that hospitable people do? So they're kind. We can all exercise kindness. Generous with time. Interesting. Okay. Okay.
If they just engage, if they engage, necessarily
have no older. Okay, so they're engaging to the people that they're around.
It's good to have both. Like, it's easy for me to start. Well, Alan, we're both talkers, so, but we're different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we work together.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's good. I think another thing that introverted people offer is the possibility to catch the people that others are missing. So often an introvert is sitting by themselves in church, for instance, and they will notice the new couple that came in late and left early. Whereas the extrovert is so busy talking to everybody that they miss that. They might be extroverted and more capable of going and meeting that person, but they have a social awareness that's maybe a little different too. So, hospitable people. Give me some other interactions that you've had with them. Just made you feel, man, I felt loved just being with that person. Have you ever been with a hospitable person and you share something with them like, okay, how'd you get that out of me? Where did I share that from, or why would I share that? Sometimes hospitable people are like that. You just feel open to sharing.
I was just remembering another debate that pursued me vigorously and would not take no for an answer.
Yeah.
Which, looking back, is remarkable. But I didn't ever tell her no. I just managed not to drop by.
Yeah.
And one day she found the phone and just very exasperatedly said to me, "You didn't come."
Yeah, yeah.
But I think for some people, like if you're extremely introverted, you can easily brush someone off thinking, oh, you know, they're just being whatever. Some of us need to be actually here with like a 2x4 before accepting an invitation. So this whole notion of being rejected, yeah, you may be rejected. And that person who's rejecting you may be the person who most needs you to pursue them.
Look at the biblical examples of hospitality and how often it says, and they persuaded him. So it's not like, so often hospitality was turned down initially. So Lot was a good example. They said no, but Lot persuaded them to come with him. You'd think from the biblical story, the visitors would have just went with Lot. That was all part of the story. It all fits. But it adds those little things in. Abraham, no exception. There was times with Jesus. It was also the same. And when you look at the word, Romans 12, again, when you go back there, it says practice hospitality. The word is actually pursue. I'm a hunter. When I pursue game, it's not like, well, hope this happens. I mean, that's generally how I hunt, but hope it happens today. But no, I'm going to go and put effort into it. I'm not going to go to the lake and go fishing and expect to go hunting, right? And so when I'm going to pursue this animal, there's active steps that I take. I'm careful with my steps. I'm careful with observing. I take intentional steps to make sure that I'm in the right location at the right time. I'm prepared. I'm ready. And all these different things. And so when it says pursue hospitality, there's some intentional act behind it. And hospitable people are going to make that effort. They're going to do things that are difficult, that are out of character, that are not easy, that are inconvenient, in order to do something that will accomplish something great. And hospitable people generally are those people that will make a real effort or don't even give you an option. Like, so when are you coming over? I didn't know I had an option to, like, can I come over or not come over? Or they'll come up to you, hey, you're coming over for lunch today. Okay. Sometimes it's the pursuit. I think that's very important. Anyone else about hospitable people? How do they do that, though? Okay. Anyone got any insights?
If they show that they're genuinely interested in you and not seeking a fight or right away being confrontational or just more or less interrogating you to see if you fit or not, there's worlds apart when you look at those two personalities.
So when you look at Romans 12, again, it gives us that example. Love must be sincere and genuine, not with an agenda, not with a task, not with, I'm going to invite this person over and I'm going to hammer them with the gospel. I'm going to get them. Instead, love is often a sacrificial, a giving, a listening. And so this is what you're, I think, experiencing. There's just a genuineness to that relationship. They care about you, and that's huge. Good. Can I give you one way to make sure that never happens? Is to gossip. When you have somebody over, especially a stranger, someone that you don't know, don't start talking about everybody else in town. It's going to destroy that person's trust with you. They're not going to share anything with you because they know it's going to go to the rest of the town. And so it's actually imperative that we're really careful with our words when we have people over or when we interact with people. That's why gossip is looked at. It's a sin. God doesn't want it in the church. So. Anyone else? You guys are doing a great job teaching this, by the way. So. I'm going to just give you a few things that, I would encourage you to do, again, with the posture and preparing to be, preparing and going out. When there's somebody that you don't know, be thinking, as you're standing in the grocery line, this person is obviously from a different country. Simple questions. Where did you come from? Where did you move from? your family here? You know, there's questions that can come about. And you never know. And again, if we don't ask questions, we're not very likely to hear the heart drops either. So it comes down to posture, being ready so that we're open. Now, again, let's be clear on that. Not all hospitality is having someone in for supper. Hospitality has to do with your outlook on the people who are not in your general sphere, your love for strangers. Do you love people you don't know? That's as simple as I can put this whole idea of hospitality. Are you loving people that you don't know? Or are you only loving the people that you know? Your own family, your own church, your own people that you farm with. Or do you love people that you don't know yet? And that's the goal behind hospitality. So let's break down a few different things now, just really quickly as we sort of wrap up today. Let's break down some of the biblical concepts of things that happen in hospitality. And I don't think all of them need to happen on a night that we get somebody together, but all of them are key ingredients to hospitality. Okay, so just bear with me a little bit. First one, greet one another with a holy kiss. What does that mean? Do you do that as a church? Not going to admit it if you did. I wasn't coming tomorrow if you were. So. Oh, man. So, Jesus, in the story of Simon the Pharisee, there's two people there. So the Pharisee and the woman, the sinful woman. And there's a difference between the two. And Jesus looks at Simon and says, "When I came in, you never washed my feet, nor did you greet me with a kiss. But from the time that I came in, she has not stopped kissing my feet and washing my feet with her tears. And he shows the distinction between a genuine care for Jesus out of love and out of worship. But remember the passage that you already talked about. Whatever you did for the least of these, you did for me. So do we love people enough? Or do you think that Simon, if Simon really knew who was sitting in his presence, don't you think he would have washed his feet? Why didn't Simon wash Jesus' feet? Okay. I think there's part of it, the very human side of it. So I think if we just start with just this idea of welcome. So Simon didn't even welcome Jesus in with even a customary kiss that you would welcome any guest with. Why not? I think so. Or he thought, like, either I'm superior to him or we're on equal terms and so I don't greet you that way. I don't know. We really don't know. But I think he's waiting to test Jesus in that way. And I think we do that unknowingly with a lot of people. And we actually withhold something like welcome or just a genuine care. It's glad to see you. Good to meet you. Good to introduce myself to you. Welcome is just the initial response, the initial interaction, the first interaction you have with the person. Is it welcoming? Many of us, when we gave a definition of hospitality, we started with, it's a welcoming person. Well, let's just break that down. What is a welcoming person? How would you define a welcoming person or an unwelcoming person? Okay, so I like that picture of getting up and going to where you're genuinely happy to see the person there, and so it elicits a response from you. You're going to go across the lobby at the church to meet that person. There's actually a physical movement to go and welcome and greet the person. Simon the Pharisee likely just stayed at the table like, oh, Jesus is here. You know, There's a casualness to it instead of an intentionality to it. So something like a welcome is actually really important. How else might that look? A welcoming.
Eye contact.
Smile. Good. So, yeah, just simple things, right? So who's heard of the hospitality industry? What does the hospitality industry focus on? Why do we have whole parts of our world wrapped up in that? It works. Like, what do they focus on, though?
Customer service.
Instantly comfortable.
It's a huge financial game.
It is. And so here's the distinction. This is one of the reasons I was told, go and research hospitality industry. And the more we did that, the more we realized it's not like Christian hospitality and Christian welcome. Although we can learn some stuff. So there's the initial person's response when they come into a hotel or a restaurant makes a massive impact on your relationship that you're going to have for the rest of the time. If a person comes in and is greeted with coldness, it's like, well, why are you here? Like, I don't really care that you're here. Your attitude sort of displays that. Rather than the customer is always right kind of an idea, like we're here to serve you and to care for you and to make sure that you feel loved. And cared for, your needs are met even before you've thought about them, all those different things. Welcome is a big part of the hospitality industry. But the motives are different. Their motives are, how can we make a person feel welcome so they'll come back and so that they'll give us money? Instead of the welcome being a part of just the initial response of showing love to a person. So keep that in your mind. Your first interaction with a person can be genuinely loving, exciting. If you show that you're excited to meet a person and get to know them, that's a big difference than, like, why are you talking to me? And we've had hockey players in our home. You ask them a question and they sort of look at you like, just, why are you talking to me? And you feel like, okay, this is awkward, and it just creates a tension in the room completely. So your attitude is huge there. Second one, washing feet. What does washing feet mean? What does it show us? Why does Jesus do that? Serving them. So there's an act of service or care for the individual. Okay. Why did they wash feet?
Because they were dusty and dirty from walking. They only wore sandals.
Yeah. So from the day-to-day life, a person is weary. And a person has the dust of life on them. And so in a figurative sense, we don't walk in sandals anymore. So is there practical ways that we can wash one another's feet? Think of young couples right now with 5 kids. How could you wash their feet? Babysit. Yeah, but babies stink.
Ours don't in our church.
I really do think that's a significant thing. So as we look at a church life, for instance, new couples come in. Make sure that those the everyday cares of the individual, the things that have brought weariness of life, are cared for, that people are supported, they're served, and these are going to be areas that you're going to have a level of humility to do. It's not fun to always, look after babies and have someone loud in the background crying and things like that, but serve those people, in a sense. Are there other things? What about today? What are other ways that, just from day-to-day life, that we just need help? Sometimes it's nice to be served. Good. I like it. Great opportunities. Senior needs a ride somewhere. There's looking for a great opportunity to wash somebody's feet. Like, I got to get to these 5 appointments. I'll do that for you. I'll drive you around. Good. Here's another one, the busyness part. We were often thinking, we really want to get together with this couple, but both of us are just here for soccer and there for volleyball and there for this school thing and band and church programs and doing all this different stuff. And Marcia just finally said, we're both crazy. Why don't we just invite each other into our craziness? We'll make a meal. We'll come. We'll sit down for the hour we have, and then we'll go. And that was good for us because it just showed, like, we wanted to still be with the person even in the midst of our craziness. And it was just a way for us to sort of lighten their burden. They still needed to eat and yet rush off. And so it was a way for us to serve one another. So it's acts of service. Then we go, let's go, another instance of hospitality was would be table fellowship. Let's not ignore that. So let's ask the question, how is the home different than a restaurant? Is there something unique, and don't say yes because I already said it, is there something unique about the home that is different than practicing hospitality at other places? What's different about the home?
Mm-hmm. And the home is where you're more comfortable sometimes too. Your comfort level is different.
Agreed. What else happens in the home?
The home is an extension of yourself, including the furniture and the pictures that are hanging on the wall, and that may even initiate some of the conversation. There's a picture of son or daughter or whatever it may be, and you get to share what they're up to these things.
Yeah. That's very good.
It's not going to happen in the restaurant.
No, it's not. No, it's not. You're bang on. It's good. Oh, I see that classic car in your garage. Where'd you get that? Or why that car? Well, that was my dad's car. Or, you know, did you come in and your kids are acting like a bunch of hooligans? They're running up and down the stairs, and that person gets to watch you lovingly discipline your children. That's not something that's fun to do. But it's an important interaction. Sometimes it sets a unique thing. So something like table fellowship is actually increasingly unnatural. So remember I said it needs to start in the home, be part of our church, and then extended to others. If you never eat around your table regularly, the only time you do that is when you have company over, it's going to feel unnatural for you, and it's going to feel unnatural for other people. So start eating at the table at home, and start doing that if you can. And then start having people from your church over and eating at the table, and then invite somebody else into that. But if it's unnatural, we need to learn to do that again. And so we face this with a lot of hockey players. A lot of hockey players never eat around the table, and they're billeted at places that are too busy to eat around the table. They'll grab something and run out the door. They'll grab something and go downstairs. They'll grab something and sit in front of the TV. But table fellowship is something unique, and so you're actually inviting people into something that is unique. And I think they get to experience something that they likely have as a longing in their heart. So what else happens in the home? Anything?
You can serve. You have the opportunity to serve your guests.
Yep. Who's a Mary and who's a Martha? Mary, put your hand up. Mary being the one that was just loved being with the people. How many Marthas do we have? Much rather be busy in the kitchen. Okay. Was Jesus frustrated with Martha? Or why was Jesus frustrated with Martha? Okay. Are you sure? Okay.
Need
to balance them both. Okay.
Frustrated with Martha's frustration.
Okay. Right.
Because they have chosen different priorities.
Right.
Not like one is totally unimportant and doesn't need to be looked after, but Mary understands what at that moment is way more important than just physical sustenance.
Yeah. It's interesting the words that Jesus uses. He says, you are worried about many things. And so it's worried about maybe the reputation, or what's Jesus going to think if this meal doesn't work out, or what's Jesus going to think if this doesn't, everything's got to be perfect, and what if the vacuuming's not done, and all these different things. And so she's fussing with everything. And we've been there. We've been to people's places when they fuss, and it actually becomes uncomfortable. And so it's uninviting. And sometimes the nicest home can be uninviting because I don't want to bring my kids there. They'll wreck it. And so it's, anyway. So where were we talking about? Why am I talking about that? Mary and Martha. Table fellowship is unique. I think there is something unique to the home. And so when you see in Scripture, Jesus interacted with people in the street all the time and often was invited by religious leaders into the home. Why do you think? People who are hostile to Jesus invited him into their home. Okay. They wanted an avenue and a place to ask questions that couldn't be asked in public. And Nicodemus came to Jesus at night, for instance. And I think there's a uniqueness of and an intimacy that can happen in a home where you also get to share not just conversation, but family. You're sharing a part of not just yourself, but your whole family. It invites your children, your wife, your spouse, everybody into this interaction. We've heard stories of that again with some of our hockey players and so on. Who told us that story about, remember?
What story?
Yeah, that was very vague, wasn't it? Kim and Barb, that told the story about they invited a young player into their, two young players into their home, and that boy talked about that years later, about feeling invited into that home and being a part of that. And it was, just felt loved in a unique way in the home that wouldn't have happened if he would have just taken her to a restaurant. So, okay, 1 Kings, or 2 Kings, chapter 4. Let's go there quick. We're winding down, I promise. Sort of title this, A Bed, A Lamp, and a Table. Anyone know the story I'm talking about? 2 Kings 4, if we go down a little ways. Sorry, my Bible went on the fritz here. Your paper one didn't. Down to verse 8 and then down. The Shunammite. Or am I got the wrong passage here? Yeah, here it is. 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 8. One day Elisha's went to Shunem, and a well-to-do woman was there who urged him to stay for a time. So whenever he came by, he stopped there to eat. And she said to her husband, I know that this man who often comes this way is a holy man of God. Let's make a small bed and a table, a chair, and a lamp for him. Then he can stay there whenever he comes by. And one day when Elisha came, he went up to his room and lay down there. And then we get a whole other story again with some mutual blessing for the family and so on. But there is something here about respite, a place to escape to. Now, this is not going to be an everyday hospitality experience, but sometimes it's the ability to take in and to invite back a person into your life and into your home that needs a place to escape, whether it be to work or to just to... maybe it's a single mom that needs a place to go to just find rest and encouragement and refreshing and so on. Or maybe it's just a place where the home situation is not good, that you just need a place of peace. Or it might just be that we have these relationships that where my necessities, the things for my life, are looked after. Now, this is a strange one, where this well-to-do woman puts up a whole room so Elisha, whenever he came, there was something, a uniqueness to that relationship. There was an invitation into continued interaction. So just bear with me. A part of hospitality might be that God's inviting you to interact with a person on a regular basis. Why don't you come back every Thursday? Why don't we spend Thursdays together? So part of hospitality is an intention behind it to offer them respite and care and refreshing. And part of hospitality offers this place of rescue and retreat. And I think that's important too. So we have foot washing, we have welcome, we have table fellowship, we have all these different parts in Scripture. Lastly, we have farewell. It's written almost at the end of every Paul's letters. What does farewell mean? You say, hey, see ya. Or you can say farewell. Just break down the word for me. We want you to fare well. Now, we need to practically be involved in that. If I'm going to send somebody out my door He says, in the book of James, Jesus says, a religion that is sort of fake and worthless is to say, go be well and warm and well-fed, but you do nothing. You're kind of a hypocrite. You're kind of dumb. That's faith without works. And in the same way, that's the way it looks sometimes. If we say farewell, but we've done nothing to care for the person's soul, we've done nothing maybe to care for their practical needs, there's been no sacrifice of service or love or anything, to just say, yeah, see you later. So in our farewell, it's this desire to send a person on in their journey more equipped than they were when they came to us. So a big part of hospitality is that. If I'm going to love the stranger, when we leave, when we part ways, I want this person to be better off than when we first started to interact. Simple? That's maybe a good way. When we just break down welcome and farewell, that interaction can take 2 minutes. We greet them with love. It may not lead to someone coming into my house and having a meal together. It might not mean that they come every Thursday. It might not mean that I get to do foot washing and so on. But at the same time, what if it does mean that I can welcome and say farewell or goodbye, and in such a way that person has been blessed, they've been encouraged. Maybe I prayed for that person. That's another great one. And these are some of the interactions of hospitality that hospitality has played. Sean, shut up. Questions? Let's leave it at that until tomorrow.
Can you speak a little to the whole hurdle of being in a very different place spiritually, for example, when the stranger is not a believer, for example?
Okay. Again, evangelism. We often think of evangelism as talking. I need to share the gospel. Very much of evangelism. How many times did Jesus ask questions? Have you noticed that? When Jesus is drawing somebody out, he often asks questions. And I think this is really important for us to come to realize too. We can present the gospel to basically throw seed on ground that is very hard. And I think it's important that we scatter seed on parts of broken ground. Now, I say that. It's simple to ask questions. And I think we need to learn to listen and to ask questions of unbelievers, to be genuinely interested in their life so that we can speak the truth of the gospel into a person's life in the areas of need that they've shared with us, rather than just puking the gospel on them and hoping it sticks and thinking we've loved them in some way. But I think when we can speak the truth of the goodness of God and the grace of God into a life that they know they're struggling, or areas where they've shared, or maybe some of those heart drops, then the gospel is much more effective. So a big part of evangelism, for instance, is listening, not necessarily being super good at sharing your faith. So, does that sort of help? Well, I don't say that, but I do it.
I mean, what's being communicated?
I guess with the invitation to come into somebody's home, you'd think they'd come expecting that this is they're part of your home. So I would be unapologetic about those things, but I wouldn't do them. I'm going to pray for 5 minutes tonight when I usually pray for 1 minute. Like, don't put on a show that's not natural, if I can put it that way. If you pray, pray simply. And don't use it as an opportunity to preach necessarily. So, does that help? I wouldn't ask permission. I've invited them into my home, and then I'll ask, you know, can we pray? And if that person gets up and walks out, I guess that's one thing. That's never happened, but yeah. I don't think we need to be as scared of people as we think either. But we also need to have the reality that they're going to think you're a fool. Like, people are more than willing to interact with you, but we're going to look foolish to some people. Jesus already tells us that that's going to happen. And so you're going to be rejected, and that's okay. But sounds fun. That was encouraging, hey? Yeah?
We shouldn't change our standards just because we've got somebody coming at our home that are non-Christians. I want to give you an example with just newly living in a condo, and when we get together for potlucks, there's a lot of them there that aren't Christians.
And my husband and I didn't know quite what to do at first, and we just bowed our heads and prayed before we got the potlucks to go eat. And then here we had a really good surprise. One time I asked him, can I say grace for all of us? And some didn't bow their heads, but I went ahead, and here I was gone to Saskatchewan taking Twain to Saskatoon for his appointment, our son. And I guess I had a potluck, and before we knew it, somebody said, Mike, your turn to pray. Are you praying for a week? Well, he's never prayed in, between anybody, I don't think, other than our immediate family, but he did it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wow. But why should we change our standards for people are watching us all the time?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's some wonderful Christians there that were too shy to pray, but hey, God worked it all out.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. I'm the token prayer guy on the Broncos, too. I get asked to pray for everything, and that's great. But it's just one unique opportunity we get to have, for sure.
Lord, what would be the equivalent of Jesus hanging out with prostitutes?
Okay, we're again looking at, there's a few layers to that, if I can say it that way. So Jewish, from the Jewish perspective. I know what you're getting at. So the reason I want to come at this from different layers is because we can be very Jewish in the sense that this person is unclean and unworthy of spiritual interaction. So a prostitute had no business interacting on a spiritual level with God. And so it was crazy for Jesus to meet with prostitutes because it would make him unclean. And so this whole ceremonial thing of clean and unclean, and what you're willing to interact, or who you're willing to interact with, when we think about it in that way, who is deserving of an interaction with God? And so who are those people around us? And I think in our society, we would look and just, we would write certain groups of people off, whether it be the transgender or homosexual or who they might be. It might be literal prostitutes. It might be just people that we don't understand, or think that different religions and so on, they have no desire and no ability to interact with God. And so the prostitutes and sinners were those who were unclean, and in contrast to the Pharisees who felt they were before God, Jesus turns the tables and he starts to make this all about grace and all about this fact that you and your spiritual arrogance are actually missing Jesus, whereas these people are seeking after him. And so I think the other layer of these stories is the fact that many of the people that we write off because of our religious zealousy, if that's the right word, because of our religiosity, we write them off, and yet they're actually seeking God and seeking genuine relationship with God, but we're unwilling to offer it to them. So in that way, hospitality must be offered to them, because I think people are seeking for it. They're longing for people to love them, for genuine relationship, for community, for all these different things, and yet they don't know that that's possible. That's why you see this unbelievable, it's almost unbelievable to the prostitutes that they would be able to interact with Jesus. And so that's why you see the gratitude and the thankfulness. But I think if that sort of answers your question, I think it was, they're people that would feel, from our perspective on the outside, but from God's perspective, that they're actually seeking him, but have a hard time accessing God. And I think through our hospitality, those are the people we should be going after. So, sorry if the
Pastor Josh, to deal with that is take another person with you. Like, take your spouse with if you're going to visit a prostitute, for example.
Yeah. Let's go back to the wisdom part. Yeah. Please do. Please have those levels of accountability. Yes. Oh, man.
but there are similarities to what's taboo in a Christian subculture.
Taboo. Good point. Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
And I think the difference when I look at the biblical account is these people who were looked at as outcasts and unclean, they made an initiative to be close to Jesus. While today, Sunday service or some other meeting of the church.
Which is one of the reasons...
Unless we actually go.
Yes. So hospitality being the pursuit of the opportunity to love a stranger.
There was a gentleman here who's no longer alive. His name was Alvin Lepp, who very intentionally sought out natives and had a great ministry in the Siksika Nation, mm-hmm. 45-minute drive from here. And they even gave him a special name. I'm not saying everyone's called to that, but God used him in that way. Mm-hmm.
Do a smudge or whatever, yeah.
It was a big controversy whether something like that should be allowed in the church because many, of course, looked at it as, well, that's a heathen practice. We're not allowing this kind of thing. And for others, it didn't seem as big a deal. And they wanted to emphasize the welcoming part, right? And that leads to some difficult discussions of what's okay in the church and what's not. And you wonder how Jesus would have handled that if he had been confronted.
Yeah, we could open a whole other can on that one. I'm gonna leave that alone. That's a good point.
I mean, here in Rosemary, the more immediate concern would be, let's say you have Mormon neighbors, and you extend hospitality in a way that, you know, you may have a meal together and you let your children play together, but what if your child is invited to a church event or a temple event? Mormons, you know, do you just let your child go? Or is your concern of how they may be influenced in a bad way greater than, you know, sort of creating an offense by saying, no, you're not allowed to go there?
Yeah, I mean, we face that all the time in the Catholic community too. We get that for sure. And some of that is wisdom. Sometimes it's circumstance you need to make. I guess spirit-led decisions. Not all of those decisions are going to look the same. You should always do this or always do that.
The Samaritans represented that, right? Different belief. Different holy mountain. And definitely regarded from the Jewish side as the worst of the worst.
Yep. You read a lot of biographies and stories, people's conversion stories. I don't know how many of them, if any, are without interaction of another with another person. And because of the intentional interaction of another person, often a stranger, that person has come to faith. And so I think it's very important. Many people aren't saved through a program even in the church. They were saved individually in a home or with another person. And so these interactions are far more important than we likely realize. But 2 more minutes. Anyone else? I'm dying to be on my phone, so I gotta... No, I'm just kidding. Let's pray. Father God, thanks. It's been fun to be together. Lord, I've way overextended this and probably muddied the idea of hospitality more than it needs to be. I thank you that you were gracious to us. You came and you sought us out while we were still enemies and strangers and exiles from you. And so we just look with gratitude on the grace that we've been extended. Lord, help our unbelief, help our fears, our inhibitions, or our insecurities, things that are holding us back from loving the stranger. Lord, and some of them genuine, some of them hurdles that we have. I just pray that you would help us to learn to be faithful, just deal with our posture first, and just help move us in a direction that is just has eyes out for those people who are outside of our sphere. Lord, in our interactions, even tonight, I just pray that you would be stirring in our hearts to reveal names or faces of people that we've interacted with already that you're calling us to pursue. And in that pursuit, I pray that you would help us to be intentional in making a plan and then going after and just being excited about the opportunity that you place right in our midst here to love the stranger. Help us to have genuine love and care for others. Help us to listen well. Help us to be clear in our goal and our mission here as well. And thanks for the chance to be together again around your word and around this conversation. In Jesus' name, amen. We'll see you back tomorrow morning.
Thank you very much, Sean. I think he deserves